Hey, it's Vlad O'Mara.
And I'm Nectarios.
And this is Naked by the Future Farm.
Join us as we strip entrepreneurship to its vulnerable core. On the surface, this week's episode could be about psychedelics. But it is so much more than that. This episode is about hope. It is about putting in the work. Hadi Poder was still a teenager when he founded his first business and went on to start another 9. But every couple of years, he got scared and walked away. What was it about those 2 years that made it difficult for him to continue? Little by little, his life started unraveling, his physical health deteriorated, his relationship fell apart, his business was collapsing. He felt isolated and scared. But why? It was a mentor who told Hadi that he was living in his head, not in his heart, and suggested psychedelics to help deal with the situation. He tried it, he found relief, did it again and again, and realized he would always find himself back in a position of pain. But why? Hadi is very critical about many practitioners in the space of psychedelics. His big learning is that you can only really address your problems when you work with a professional who has the training and the experience. In his journey, once he started putting in the work, he found that the root of all his problems was trauma caused by losing his brother at a very young age, and suddenly things started to make sense. Now Hadi describes his journey with all the pain as a blessing and is grateful for having been able to understand things and get better. Therapy will not get rid of the trauma, but it will lead to the awareness on how to live with it. It takes time, but you cannot fix something if you don't know what's causing it. Please meet Hadi. Hello, hello everybody.
Good morning, Nectarios and Vladi.
Hi, Hadi. Hi, Nick. It's good to see you after a while.
our listeners know that we don't see each other very often in the flesh, so sometimes the podcast is the only way Vladi and I can actually say hello to each other. But this time we're very excited because we've got Hadi on the call. Got Hadi in the room, who maybe let's just start doing the usual thing that we do. Hadi, where in the world are you right now?
Nice to be here, first of all. Thank you guys for asking me. Now happened something that's...
We got you back.
Yeah,
so good.
Sometimes happens. Yeah, I'm in Estonia. I'm originally from Estonia. Because of my business, I go to Portugal, so I'm on and off in Estonia and in Portugal.
And are you
both
in,
of them really exciting destinations?
Are you in the city or are you in the countryside?
I'm in the city. I'm in Tallinn, capital of Estonia. So being here together with my family at the moment.
Lovely. Bloody, you look like you're at home.
I am. Well, the question is, which home are you asking me about? But I'm in my Slovak home. So we're enjoying the summer in Bratislava. So all good. Energy is good. Very excited about the conversation today because Hadi is bringing the topic that you guys know I also somehow I am deeply curious about, even though sort of stepping still at the edges of the topic of psychedelics and how we can sort of flirt a little bit maybe and find it useful for our personal growth. But so plenty of questions and excited about this. So welcome, Hardy. And Nick, Nick, you have this beautiful background, which I think is a new one, given the instructions of our production team.
I'm still in London. I'm at the other side of the table that I usually sit at. We have this new production company that encourages us to focus more on the video. So from this episode onwards, actually, we will be publishing in audio and video, and therefore I need to make my background look a little bit more pretty, apparently.
And it is pretty.
Awesome, thank you. Well, it's wonderful to have you join us, Hadi. We started talking because you posted something on LinkedIn that really triggered my attention, and it was very much, the first thought was, how come I don't know about this person? Because we feel that we usually have a bit of a grip about people who talk about their mental health journey quite openly. And then when I started digging, I realized that you've actually spoken about about your own history before. So I got super excited, got in touch, and that's why we're here. So maybe we start off by you just telling us a little bit about yourself, about your journey in this wonderful world of entrepreneurship.
Yes, of course. My journey being an entrepreneur started when I was very young. I established my first company when I was 19 years old, one construction company. I had about 40 employees working there. After the high school, I went to university to study economics. But it was so dry thing for me. And meanwhile, when I was studying it, I thought that, okay, the real things are going on in the real life. So I established my first construction company. And for you to know, guys, I didn't know a thing how to build houses or anything about construction business. But I was so eager to do something by myself. So I just put the knowledge that I got from the university into the practice immediately on the same time when I was studying it. But everything didn't go like I wanted because I didn't know how things in reality are working. So after about 2.5 years, I got my first bankruptcy. But it was also related to this worldwide economic crisis that was going on in 2008 around the world. But I got the taste what it means to be an entrepreneur, to be the boss of your own time, to decide what are you doing, with whom you are doing, how you are doing, when you are doing. And I, of course, again, decided to do something else, and I established my second company. Again, about two years passed, and I decided that's not for me, and I established my third company, and my fourth company, and my fifth company, and my sixth company. And the same pattern continued after every 2 years. What it meant, I understood about 17 years later. And now I have my 10th company. And in this 10th company, I understood like where this pattern came for me, why I was changing my direction where I was going after every 2 years. But before understanding it, like Nectarius, you said that you saw my LinkedIn post about my burnout and you wanted to know a bit more about me, what kind of guy this hardly is from Estonia. So yeah, in 2015/16, I got my first huge burnout, mentally and physically, because I was all the time focusing on business and building something. And then after 2 years, I faced again some troubles, some obstacles, and I ran away and made a new business. But guys, like having two little kids, I have two sons. Today, my older son got 15. Today is a huge day. Exactly 15 years ago, I became a father. So I'm very proud of it. I was never at home. I was all the time working. And I was working even when I was sleeping because I was dreaming about work. I was dreaming about those obstacles that I was facing on a daytime. And when I woke up, I was even more tired than the day before going to sleep. So what happened was that my physical and mental body started to collapse. My relationship collapsed with a mother of my kids. So we broke up. My business collapsed because I was not doing it with my heart anymore. I didn't know what to do anymore. I was physically collapsing. I couldn't walk anymore. At that time, I liked to run a lot in the morning, like having your morning jog. But in one moment, I found myself in the middle of the forest where I was running like every morning. And the pain in my pelvis was so hard. It felt like someone is like...
Your body was telling you.
Oh, yeah. It was collapsing. Yeah. It was breaking down. And
Hardy, if you don't mind, maybe it would be useful for us and for all our listeners to put it a little bit into a timeline. So, because already there is so much that you have shared, and we've been sort of doing this conversations, naked conversations, for nearly over 2 years, and both Nick Tyres and myself are in the journey of building our own businesses. So I think this general notion of that this is not an easy path that people sort of decide to sort of take in their embark on in their lives. So we are aware of the struggles, but I think from what I'm hearing from you, the fact that you've been launching five to six businesses one after another just feels like another massive layer on the top of it. Like, can you tell us a little bit more what was happening for you around this time? And also, when did the burnout come in? Was it somewhere on the journey of swapping or changing those businesses, or was it after a while? So what's the sort of timeline there, or what was happening for you?
So I established my first company in 2006, second one in 2008, and so it went. And the culmination came in 2015/16. What was going on that time, or why the culmination came after every 2 years, and why I had this major burnout in 2015? It was like, my understanding at the moment is like this, that it was caused by that. With the 2 years, like, you are creating some kind of startup, you are starting to do something, but bloody, there are so basic things that everyone knows how to do those at the beginning. But in my case, with the 2 years, I found myself in the position or situation where I needed to make some decisions how to continue, and I needed to face some obstacles the relationships between different people working in my company. I needed to decide, and making a decision means that you are taking responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
And why there was a case for me to not to take responsibility and run away, I understood years later, after professional psychedelic assisted therapy together with a professional psychotherapy. It was my like very specific pattern that I was going through. Mm-hmm. With the 2 years, I faced the same similar obstacles. Like every time, it didn't matter in which field I was active. Was it construction? Was it microbiology? I was growing medicinal mushrooms even in the laboratory. You face the same things being entrepreneur. You, in one moment, you need to take the responsibility, and I was afraid to take it. Mm. But it, like this being afraid, later on I understood that it came from my childhood.
And we'll get there for sure.
There is a piece here, which is a little bit, and we all know this having been building businesses, that the excitement of an early stage business with all the freedom is super amazing and super fun. It comes with challenges, but I can relate to that. But at some point, and it's interesting that you mentioned this, that for you, it's always been 2 years. There's an element of growing up. There's an element of facing the fact that, as you say, taking responsibilities and making some decisions that are a bit harder, which for me is a little bit like the grown-up stuff, where the fun stuff slowly disappears, mm-hmm. and then it becomes a very different company, right? It's also interesting because when you talk to investors, they tell you that the founding team is usually not the team that is the one that is still there when the company goes IPO, because you need a particular profile of people to start, and then a particular profile of people to take it big, right? But we sometimes draw the analogies to romantic relationships.
I was thinking the same. You are so thinking alike, buddy. But why should I be surprised, right?
Because we just met, Vladdy, right? We all have these friends who go from relationship to relationship. And usually it's around this 2-year period, because that's where you start having this conversation about, are we serious enough? Is this one of the two usually wants to have a little bit more of a commitment. So you talking about this repeated pattern is, for me, that made me think of that. But I'm particularly intrigued, and maybe this is taking the conversation slightly different, because when you started talking about your burnout, I realized that we often talk about burnout and everybody has their own definition. So you started giving us some pointers about what that burnout meant for you. So you started talking about the physical pain. Would you be okay talking a little bit more about what that actually, how it manifested itself? What were the different things that you experienced when you said burnout?
Like, I think everyone understands when I'm talking about the physical burnout, like when your physical body is collapsing, you can't sleep anymore. You are all the time tired. You have different places in your body. You have pain. It aches like everywhere. It's awful. You're sick all the time. No energy. This is the part of what I think everyone understands. But another, like the hidden part of burnout is this mental burnout. Like, guys, inside, I was crying. I was screaming because everything in my life was collapsing. Like the relationship with my ex, relationships with my kids, relationships with my friends. But outside, how I stood up, like, I think a very few people saw that I'm so hurt inside of myself. Like, I think the majority of the people around me didn't see it, didn't notice it, that something is wrong. What was the point where they started to see or notice something, that something is very wrong with Hardy, was when I started to drink and smoke like crazy. I was partying like crazy. When I broke up with my ex, it was so hard, but it was my solution, it was my reaction for this pain that I was carrying inside of myself. Like, I wanted to be numb.
Yeah.
Luckily, I had money that time, and I was able to have all this, like, party all the time and having alcohol and cigarettes all the time. And I was numbing myself. That's why I didn't feel like everywhere mentally and physically is hurting. I think this period was about 6 months in a row. It was pretty crazy. I was burning myself from the both sides.
I think we have individually different experiences with this numbing experience, like in terms of what do we look for in order not to feel. Before we go into how you met your mentor and coach, because I know that that was really transformational on your personal journey. If we stay for a little bit in this experience, the bit I'm curious about, Hardy, is whilst you were in this state of self, in the state of being, on the journey and in the burnout later on, what was your relationship to your team? Because I sort of, and I'm asking even selfishly for myself, that as a founder, as being a leader in the organization, there is that notion that you are in that lonely place. I'm sort of being immensely grateful for having co-founders, but I do meet often the solo founders and solo CEOs, and that is an extremely lonely place. So how was your relationship with the team? Were you the solo wolf and not showing anything, or was there a little bit of vulnerability sort of coming through or cascading to your team? How was that?
Vladi, at that time, I was leading a sales team, more than 600 people. So I was their leader. I was coaching them. I was mentoring them. I was motivating them, helping them, like doing everything for them. And we had like this weekly sales meetings and team meetings. One thing what I remember that I was so afraid in this period to do was to watch them into their eyes. I was like hiding away my eyes mm-hmm. all the time.
So they can't see what's happening.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because like if you watch into others' eyes, why once wise man said that you can see the spirit of this person, like where in which place this person is at the moment. And I was inside, I was crying all the time. It was so hard for me. That's why I was like hiding my eyes or like looking somewhere else. Like, mm-hmm. I was running away from it. And as I was burning myself all the time, then I didn't want to meet with my team anymore. I started to find excuses not to go to those meetings and trainings. I'm sick. I don't feel myself well. I will delegate it to some other team leader and they will take care of it. Maybe I can come and be just part of an audience. And I was like walking away. I was walking away from those people who were surrounding me for years. And I was so afraid, like maybe someone sees my soul, like what is going on? Like maybe someone understands like how painful this situation is at the moment in my life. Mm. Like everything was crashing, to be truly honest.
We're curious generally when we talk to people to get a sense of how aware you were of the signals that your body was sending you. So when you hit the burnout, it was obvious, right? It all came together. But even in that period where you were avoiding people, was there something there that where you felt, where you actually knew that this is what was happening? Or was the numbing so strong that you, where were you in the spectrum?
The numbing was also very strong. But Nectarios, I think, and here I have to say that everything that I talk today here, it is according to my experiences and it is only my truth. This is, I'm not presenting some kind of ultimate truth or this is how things are. What I'm talking is how I feel, how I understand at this very present moment today. Mm-hmm. When we are recording it, maybe after a couple of years, I will talk something totally different, or I feel I understand differently. So, but Nectarios, I think everyone knows when something is wrong with them and what they are doing. The question mainly is, are they willing to come out from this position where they are? Or they want to be hurt. Like, if you're logically thinking that being hurt, it is something that people will not enjoy, but in some cases, people are enjoying it a lot, being hurt and getting this, I don't remember the English word, like when everyone are looking, oh, you are so hurt and...
Sympathy.
Yeah, exactly.
Pity, yeah.
Yeah. And they are looking for it. And in one moment, they are starting to like being hurt and being depressed all the time, because then they get this attention of others for themselves. And others are coming to there and saying that, oh, you have so hard times. Don't worry, everything will pass. And oh, you are so dear one. But this is also a part of ego games, what we are playing. And a lot of people are playing these kind of games, especially I was playing it. In one moment, I started to like to being hurt all the time. Because then I got this attention that I was I was needing it. I was screaming for it because my family broke up. I needed to move out from my apartment and then find myself a new place. So then you start to, if your real family goes away or breaks, you break up with your family, then you start to find something similar in some other places in your life. And to get this closeness and that someone is listening to you and someone is putting attention and focus on you, then one very smart thing what ego might do is to blame this person who is so hurt. At the beginning, I was hiding that I have hard times. And after some time, I was showing for everyone that I have hard times. I am allowed to be like, to act like an idiot, to drink all the time, to smoke all the time. Yeah. F all you, like this kind of attitude. I was the boss. Mm-hmm. Like,
what was the internal dialogue, Hardy, there? I'm curious within you, because I understand that neediness, which actually to some level, like I can feel sympathy or even to the level of empathy, that there is the suffering happening. So it's a place where it comes from. But I wonder whether there is a dialogue which is around, I know this is harmful to me, potentially, I'm assuming, but I'm still going to, as you using your words, stay within the game. Is there like the two Hardys talking? What was happening within you?
Yeah, two Hardys were talking all the time. One Hardy was telling to me that you should be in this position, situation. And another one was screaming and crying inside. And why it was screaming and crying was because this Hardy didn't see the solution for this situation where I was. Like, I understood, like, we all understand when we are burning ourselves deeply. Like, you understand it. This is the feeling. You know what you are doing to yourself. But the question is, this is like this subconscious mind of you are talking to you. Stop, Hardy, stop doing this, what you're doing. You are burning, you are killing yourself. Don't do it. You know it's bad for you. And then the negotiation comes between the mind and the subconscious mind. But the mind is saying that, okay, I understand that I'm, what I'm doing to myself, but I don't have any this kind of information how to come out from it. And I haven't heard that someone else, like in this kind of position where I am, are having or have had the similar things or going through the similar things. I don't know any kind of role models in my life, like with whom to compare or from whom to ask, like what did you do? So there was all the time this kind of conversation inside of me.
There's a person in my life who used to be very, I mean, it's him, he is still very important for me, but it's complicated. And he's currently, I think it sounds like he's experiencing something very similar that you describe. Being outside as an observer is also quite paralyzing to the level that it doesn't seem like we can do anything in order to help him. So it at times it feels quite hopeless. And the narrative that I've heard from him is that he's not looking for the help. He was literally using the words of, I need life to sort of give me to show me. I need to come to the complete ground, and you know, like, which is a little bit of this self-tortures. So some of the things that you're saying, like, it rings a lot of bells. And so I guess it's just a reflection I'm sharing, that even when you are outside, we trying to sort of surround him with some tools and resources and maybe stories, but it's still, I'm not sure whether it's even lending. So it's very helpful or insightful to actually listening to your story, and maybe it's a bridge towards what happened to you after. So when you found yourself within this space of being, what were the triggers for you to take the step outside? So let's bring some hope like into this.
We watched the movie, Hardy was in the forest and you started feeling the pain in your pelvis, And then we had a flashback element in the movie where we went back and looked at some of the painful stuff. And now the camera cuts back into you're in the forest and your pelvis hurts and you can't run anymore.
Yes. Like Vladi, you said that for your friend or close one, he was saying that he was looking for some kind of sign from life. So like this huge pain in my pelvis, feeling that my body is collapsing, was the sign for me that now it is time to change something. And luckily I knew that on that time one functional medicine doctor, and I spoke to her like about my physical problems, not my mental problems. And she said to me that she knows someone who might be useful for me or who can help me. And she introduced to one older Estonian businessman who became a mentor for me. He was and is successful, about 20 years older than me. And we became friends and he started to mentor me. And he was doing like different therapies as well. Like he had studied Chinese different therapy methods, and like he was going to this spiritual side as well. Not being only like in the business world and doing businesses. He had his own pretty successful business as well, but he's also like was studying and learning about the spirituality and like energies and these kind of things. And in one moment, when he was mentoring me, he said to me that, Hardy, may I tell you what is your problem in your life? And guys, if someone tells you that he or she can tell you what is wrong in your life, in your shoes, only with what you have been walking all your life, then in this very moment, it seems or sounds like a blessing. Oh my God, now the solution comes and it comes outside from yourself. Someone is telling you what is wrong. For me, it equals that this is the possibility or option for me to give away the responsibility again. Please tell me what is wrong. Take the responsibility for my life. And he told me very nicely, Hardy, your problem is that you are living in your head, not in your heart. Fantastic.
What the F does that mean? You know, it's like, what a esoteric crap. You know, no, I'm saying just many people can think that, you know.
Yeah. And then he continued that I'm, and he was right in some way. He was also right. Because I was calculating everything. Like I had a little Microsoft Excel program in my head, like calculating everything in it, like according to the past experiences that I had experienced. But the life happens here in this very moment, not all the time. Like you can't make all those calculations and decisions according to your past. You need to be in present moment as well. And after that sentence, when he said that I was all the time in my head, not in my heart, he continued with another sentence that blew my mind. And he said to me, Hardy, what about psychedelics? And guys, for me on that time, these kind of things equal with narcotics. They are bad. They are bad for your mental health. They are bad for your physical health. So this is illegal activity. This is criminal thing. Like only bad people are using these kind of things. But as I had already huge respect to my mentor and I trusted him a lot, then I said to him that, okay, if you see that it might help me, then I'm willing to try it out. But there is only one but. You have to come together with me. And he agreed. And we signed up for 3-night retreat for ayahuasca ceremony. Like the shaman came to Europe. I'm not mentioning where we were doing it because in Europe it is gray area still in many countries or almost all countries. But We went there. It was a three-night retreat. First time in my life. It was a group retreat. About 40 people in one room and drinking this secret ayahuasca coming from the South America jungle. And it was powerful. I can't hide it. It in some way, it changed my life. It was so powerful for me. And the flow after those 3 nights of tripping with a shaman and singing those Icaros are called those songs there, what they're singing, those shamans. It was mind-blowing. I saw things that I had not seen before. And I felt that, okay, now came the energy shift that I was looking for. Now my life changed. And now I'm a newborn. And now the new life starts. And everything will be good and fine. And I'm more powerful than ever before. But guys, it lasted about 2 weeks. Meanwhile,
yeah, I mean, frankly, yeah. I think if you do an advertising around this, it sounded like some fake product, you know, like everything that we listed. So there is a story to this, just saying, not spoiling anything, but yeah, okay. No, okay, let's go into this. So it lasted for about 2 weeks, you're saying. And yeah. So before we go there, can you be a little bit more specific? So what felt transformational? Was it the level of awareness or give us some colors? Maybe literally.
Like I was on that time, if everything is crashing in your life, collapsing, then you're starting to look the meaning of yourself, of what mm-hmm. you are doing. Like what's the point of being on this planet of Earth?
So big questions.
Mm-hmm. Big questions, like those fundamental questions. People will, in one moment in their lives, they will start to ask and mainly these moments are when you are like in this hard position or everything is not right in your life or it's not easy. So what happened? What I caught, and this caught is on quote unquote, outside from myself was this amazing level of energy and this clearness. And I started to see and feel the world on a deeper levels. Like it's very hard to explain if you haven't experienced mm-hmm. this kind of, like this is like multidimensional. Like you start to feel, it is possible, like the main component of ayahuasca drink is TMT, psychoactive substance, TMT. And under TMT, many people are saying that they start to see the sound, the vibration of sound, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. like in the cartoon. And it's mind-blowing. Like you start to think that there is so much hidden in this very world, what we don't see in the normal states of consciousness. And you start to see and also look for this deeper meaning of life. And experiencing first time in your life, these kind of things, like this deeper meaning of life, you're seeing the sound. You're seeing the sound, not hearing, but seeing, you're feeling. Like, then it might seem for you that you made the shift in your life. But hey, guys, it's because of the substance mainly. Mm-hmm. But the substance will go away from your blood works. So for me, this kind of amazing light feeling that I'm newborn lasted about 2 weeks. Like I thought in one moment, I even thought that I'm now enlightened. Mm-hmm. Now I'm Buddha or whatever. And I didn't care a thing what was going on in the real life. So I closed my company, said to my employees, bye-bye. I don't want to do it because it is all ego games, what you are playing here. And I'm not playing it anymore because I'm now spiritually awakened and I got this amazing experience and this is my new life.
Wow.
Oh my God.
Yeah, now it's wow. Say
that, yeah, that was wow. And But it, as I said, it lasted about 2 weeks, and I dropped back to the same or even to the worse position than before. And I started to realize, okay, these kind of things don't work like this as I thought. But being a wise guy, a smart guy, young guy, I thought that the solution, the magic pill, are those amazing substances called psychedelics. And in 2017, I'm not afraid to saying it, I was tripping every week.
Mm-hmm.
Using different substances and hoping that these substances will cure me or will give me something that I don't have. Knowledge, understanding, information, more energy, different energy, etc. But it was all the ego game that I was playing, and together with those people with whom I was playing it, they were like amplifying this feeling, because it was approached like this, that Hardy, if you didn't solve this time your problems or the answer didn't come, then sign up for the next Friday session. Definitely the solution will come for you. And there will be like-minded people like you, also entrepreneurs. Maybe you can put your bright heads together and create something totally new that will save the world. Fantastic. Where can I sign up?
Out of 50. Such a shame, man. You know, I'm just thinking.
This is not in Estonia or Europe. Yeah. It is everywhere in the world. Like it is called spiritual narcissism. What those leaders who are like organizing these kind of group sessions are doing. This is a money-making machine.
Mm.
Of course, you can.
Sorry. Yeah. Go ahead.
You can go and see those beautiful energies and pictures under the psychoactive substance. On that time, I really thought that this is the solution, and these amazing and very smart and intelligent substances will give me something that I'm missing. Now I can say that nobody or nothing can give you something extra that you are not having at the moment. You are having everything in your life. The question is, are you willing to see it, or you are being afraid to see what you're carrying inside of yourself? So, but this conversation will go too deep, and it will take too much time from our time. But for a conclusion, I was tripping for years, looking for answers for my solutions. My real life were going worse and worse all the time.
Okay.
Like, reality went. I thought that something can fix me or cure me, and I thought that these are psychedelics and those group sessions. Some things changed, but I didn't understand where the change came from. Yeah, in reality, something really changed. But guys, I have had more than 150 psychedelic sessions.
Mm.
150, a lot.
So listen to you. It's really, so there's, we sort of seem to have moved into chapter two, right? So there's chapter one, where you keep looking for something by starting a business. And after 2 years, you realize, I'm not getting what I think I need. Let's try again and again and again. And then you have this burnout / transformational moment where you enter the second phase. But if I were to play back to you what I'm hearing, you were just using a different environment to continue looking for something. And yes, after 150 psychedelic sessions, you still didn't get it, right? So, but when you start talking about the industry, there's a clear recognition that this thing is flawed. So where was the moment where the second phase flipped and you got to somewhere where you realized this isn't working for me either? Because it sounds like, and I'm really, so I've been very quiet. I've been really fascinated by this world where you sort of immerse yourself into something because you get something out of it. It might not be what you need, but it's definitely something that you want in that moment because of this illusion, right?
Yes. But
the interesting points are always these inflection points. So the jog in the forest, the mentor that told you you should try this to get out of your head and into your heart. Where's the next inflection point? What twisted, turned the direction of the second phase for you?
Yeah, the change came when someone introduced me one-to-one concept and psychedelic assisted therapy. It was sold for me that this is the real therapy. Like before that, all those years, I had those experiences in a group. Like so many different people came together and had some kind of substances, and someone was leading this group session, and everyone were doing something there. Nobody understood what they're doing and wanted to become enlightened or getting information, whatever. So, and then I was introduced to one-to-one concept, and then I was also introduced to the word of integration.
Mm.
And now things started to change. I with my mind, I started to see that something is changing in my life. And the integration is what you are doing after this psychedelic session in your normal states of consciousness in everyday life, in your business, in your relationships, in your real life. What kind of things are you changing there, those activities? This is called integration.
Hardy, question. Yes. Sorry, question here. Can you guide us to a better sense of detail? So am I right imagining it that I am sort of going through this experience of, in this case, it's taking psychedelics or substance. There is some sort of a guide, let's call it a guide for the sake of the word. And the guy sort of helps you to understand, guide you through experience, then it's a conversation. What's happening? What is that integration? I understand it's about focusing on how do I implement maybe the impacts into my daily life, or how do I show up, but how does that integration even happen? Is it through conversation, or what is happening there?
Coming back to those guides, let's call them guides. There are three levels of guides in this industry. First level is those people who just have had some psychedelic sessions, having had like have experiences with LSD or MDMA or whatever substance, and now inviting them friends to come and join because it's so fun and it's real entertainment and you see those beautiful pictures. This is the level first. Then the second level are those people who are saying that they are therapists and they are doing therapy without having any education or like this kind of background, the like professional background to do it. Like have not been studying psychology or psychotherapy at the university, nothing like. They're now saying that I'm the therapist or I'm the shaman. I have the rights to do this.
Mm.
And these kind of people introduced to me this concept one-to-one. One therapist and one patient.
Mm-hmm.
And the third level that I met after years of experiencing different things are the professional psychotherapists who have the specific education, like trainings, years of trainings, and they know how human psychology is working, how your mind is working, how, like, they're saying that it is so easy to open a person, to get those traumas and things that are stopping you in your life for living in full potential. It is so easy to bring them up. But now the question comes, what is hard? And hard is to put those people together again, that they can manage in real life. Like you can bring those traumatic events out from your childhood. Oh, I'm so powerful a therapist. I brought this trauma out. But now the session is over and the patient is going back home. You as a therapist, you take another patient and your life continues and you bring another trauma out. But for this patient for whom the trauma was brought out, question now arises how he or she can manage in this real life now with this memory of this traumatic event or something.
Mm.
And this is like a very serious thing. And this is where I want to say for everyone, these kind of very powerful substances called psychedelics are not for entertainment. And I recommend to use these kind of things only together with a professional guidance. And under professional guidance, I mean like professional psychotherapists, clinical psychologists, like people who know what to do and how to do. And that was my third phase, like Nectarius, you ask, like where the, in the second phase, the change came or the click came. And now I moved to the third phase and I started to understand like what was keeping me back in my life or why I was going this 2 year pattern all the time, 2 year new company, 2 years new company, where it all came, like why I was afraid to take the responsibility. And it all came out for me or clear for me when there was added a professional psychotherapy in integration. Like the change or the magic happens in integration, not in a psychedelic assisted therapy or session. There you can get the awareness what kind of trouble you are carrying in your invisible backpack. You get the awareness and now the work starts next day. In a clear mind, in a normal state of consciousness. And guys, it takes time. It's never some kind of fast fix or something. And it's always unique. Because everyone are unique. There isn't this kind of concept like one fits for all. Mm-hmm. Because Vladi, you have your own unique background. Nectarius, you have your own unique background. For you, there are unique method to deal with it as well.
You know, it's interesting because ultimately what I'm sort of taking out of this, what I'm hearing or maybe integrating in a way, is that it is about that I felt like following the chapter, so there is that inflection point or that moment where you hit some sort of a imaginary ground, whatever that is, right? For you, it was mm-hmm. the physical pain in your pelvis. So there is some sort of a strong trigger where you decide, where we decide, okay, enough. And we start looking outside for some sort of a help. This was the journey for yourself with psychedelics as one sort of potential support. I think now we've, over the course of the few years, Nectarius and I have learned and we discussed number of those. So whether that's a cognitive therapy, I mean, psychosomatic therapy, when we sort of integrate the mind, heart, body, soul, right? And there are an array of others. I think ultimately that's the message for me, is that what you said about being unique is that I think the hope for me comes from the fact that at some point, for most of us, I'm not saying for all, there is something out there, but it does require that step forward, looking out for the support. And I think it's also the message of, it might not always work on the first instance. Actually, most probably doesn't work on the first instance, whatever you try, right? I mean, I remember dating number of therapists, right? Quote unquote dating. It's just to find out what type of sort of methods, et cetera, et cetera. And I remember the pleasure, the inner joy of finding someone where I felt that this is the click. And then I stuck around and it really started making impact on my life. So I think if I summarize it, I think that's the message that I'm also taking, is that hope of there is an array of options to look for support and tools and toolkits, as we call them. And it takes that sort of courage, stepping out of comfort zone, try. And ultimately, I do believe that something might help, something might fit in your life. Is that how you guys also relate to this, or are you taking something else? Maybe just checking with Nectarius also on your reflections.
So I think we're still missing a bit. Which is, so first of all, I just want to acknowledge that I really appreciate your openness, Hadi, and the vulnerability that comes with it. So you're talking about the things you've experienced over the last 15 odd years or 20 years as a lot. And I mean, we're kind of used to this conversation, but for somebody who listens to your story and it's the first time they actually expose themselves to hearing a story like yours, I think it's important for me just to go 10 businesses, every business you walk away because it's not fulfilling for some reason. And being able to say, I was doing something and I didn't realize what I was doing for such a long time. That's something that I think a lot of our audience really needs to hear sometimes, because it's so easy just to keep doing the same thing without acknowledging that it's repetitive. And the reason I'm saying this is because you always look for these signals, right? Your signals came from the outside. Your signals came from your body. And we had people we kind of met who were the friends staged an intervention because they were not able to do anything in their own accord. So that's one thing, but the whole experience with psychedelics as well, the whole kind of potential for an element of, I'm going to use words that you didn't use, but an addiction to pain. Yeah. Practically going, you know what? It's not good for me in the end, but I just keep doing it because something good, I get something out of this. But with me, we started the conversation. You did, and we actually, when we had our chat before, you did talk about what you found out in your therapy. Mm-hmm. And I think this is where you use the word, where the actual work starts. Oh, yeah. So you talked about some trauma. So I was curious if you're okay spending a couple of minutes on talking about what you actually found out once you started combining everything and having these one-to-one sessions with a trained specialist to actually figure out what is it that you need to acknowledge and recognize to allow you to not go back into these unhealthy patterns. Mm-hmm.
And one pattern, like all this intro was necessary to understand why I was acting like this 2-year pattern all the time. And in one psychedelic assisted therapy session, I got this awareness, like from my family, we have this traumatic event from the beginning of 90s. When my older brother died, I was only 5.5 years old when he left. And now I have only one brother left who is very close to me. And it was so traumatic time. Of course, like I don't imagine what the parent will feel like if something this kind of horrible will happen with you or with your kids. Then I remembered one thing what happened after my brother died. We had this kind of family tradition that all the relatives are coming from for the Christmas time for 24th of December to our place, and we have a dinner together because our grandfather was living in the same house, so we gathered there. And my brother died just 2 days before the Christmas Eve. So the Christmas is very traumatic period still in my family. And being a 5.5 years old kid and knowing that relatives are coming, whom I haven't seen for a year, I was so happy. I didn't understand that my brother died just 2 days ago. I was so happy. I was laughing and running away, running around the house, mm-hmm. like little kids are doing when they're excited. Mm. And suddenly, my mother grabbed my hand like this, watched to my eyes, and said to me, "Hardy, it is not allowed to laugh and run in this house." And that, guys, changed my life. It was information for me that, Hardy, you are not allowed to feel anything in your life anymore. And I closed my emotions and feelings. For some for the listeners or viewers, it might seem like what the hell are you talking about? Like your mother grabbed your hand. Like my mother grabbed my hand when I was a child all the time. But it all depends in which moment and in how this kind of thing can happen. And it made some kind of neurological change in my brain, mm-hmm. and I closed my feelings. And I was also called like an Iron Man, because when someone after that died, someone close to me, I never cried. When my sons were born, I was like fake happy. I was laughing, I was happy, but I knew that I'm faking it. I don't feel it, like mm-hmm. deep inside of yourself. It is pretty, and the F word comes, feeling. Mm-hmm. and it's pretty hard. That was one case. Like, I closed my feelings. This is what I understood in psychedelic assisted therapy together with a therapist. Another thing that I understood, why I had this 2-year pattern and not taking the responsibility in my businesses and running away, that was because with the two years you in a business, being an entrepreneur, mainly like this happy joy is over now, and now you start to do like the real thing, make decisions and take responsibility, and maybe make not so favorable decisions for others. And the case came from my childhood, as I saw how my mother and father got hurt when their oldest child died. Then I was so afraid to hurt my mother again, because I saw how she was like being hurt all the time. So I tried to please her, and I gave the responsibility to her. Please be responsible for my life. Then you can control everything, that nothing bad will happen for us. This was the mechanism behind my activity. I gave away my responsibility to please my mother, that she could control my life, that she could keep an eye on me, that nothing will happen to us. Like we were with my brother, we weren't even not allowed to go to the other kids' birthday parties, because my mother was afraid that something might happen there. Like it was pretty hard. And being afraid of hurting someone or not pleasing someone, I took the same pattern to my grown-up life and to my businesses. And in the business with the 2 years, you have to make decisions. You have to take the responsibility. But I was so afraid to make the decision, because I led my mother to do all those decisions in my life before. I was not used to it. I was afraid. And another thing, I gave away my responsibility to my parents, that they would be pleased and satisfied and they have control over me, that will not hurt them. So I faced those childhood traumas being a grown up in my businesses, and also in my relationships. The same pattern continued in my relationship, not taking responsibility and giving option for others to decide. That was pretty crazy. And I understood it in this psychedelic assisted therapy together with a professional therapist. And when I understood it, I got this awareness. Then we started in a normal state of consciousness. We started to work with it. And it took time. It took months to go through this and to make those little changes in your mind, and also after that in your subconscious mind. Like, and you're not getting rid of traumas that you are carrying in your invisible backpack. You only get the awareness how to live together with them. You're not getting rid of anything in your life. And it is like, for me, it is real blessing that it all happened, because today I'm here being this hardy as I am, and I'm proud of it. It all shaped me in some way. And I think we all should be thankful for all those horrible and beautiful experiences in our lives, because everything is good for something. At least now, after 38 years of living here, I have this awareness, what I'm carrying in my invisible backpack, and how to live together with it, and how to like manage or control it, that it doesn't control my life, where I want to go, to this direction where I want to go. I don't know, is it understandable? But,
I was actually thinking, first of all, thank you. And as Neytara's often said, breathe in and breathe out, because the articulation of your awareness is very beautiful. I think that's where I felt the power of like just witnessing the level of awareness that you have and the relationship you have to that event in your life and the impact it created for a substantial time in your life. And in some way, I don't know whether that's fair to say, but some level of sense of belonging with it or some level of peace.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, that part feels very powerful. And again, I keep repeating myself, but I think it's also the sense of hope again. I think that that's what I keep sort of distilling from listening to you is that because you are doing the work, let's acknowledge that part because I think it's super important to really celebrate that. Then I'm distilling the hope and the learnings and the insights and the aliveness. It's a sense of aliveness that is also coming through to me, and it's inspiring to a big extent. And I think there is tons of questions that I think we both might have as a follow on. But yeah, so I think just thank you for sharing that. And I know that a lot of people certainly do resonate with that because we've heard even on this Naked show stories that were of a similar kind where people were describing the major impacts of a certain events that we didn't even know that they had such power and we didn't give them the importance. So yeah.
But thank this you. Vladi, thank you for that. But this is my story. This is my trauma. One trauma out of many traumas. I have other traumas as well. But one wisdom that I have learned from this experience is that you can't fix things that are holding you back in your life when you don't know those things, what are holding back in your life. And it goes to the physical level, mental level, emotional level, spiritual level. Like you can't fix anything if you don't know what you need to fix. And this is why this kind of awareness is so important. Like if your body is physically collapsing, then you need to know like which part of your body is collapsing. Like what is hurting this part of your body that it is collapsing. When you're collapsing mentally, like why you are mentally collapsing, what kind of traumas are the big or small traumas or whatever happenings in your life, like what is causing it? If you don't know the cause, you can't find a cure. Also for emotions, also for spiritual life. They are all related to each other. And you know that you need to know what you are doing. And I think this is what entrepreneurs who are listening it and executives understand it. Like, you need to know what you are doing. Like, you need to have this direction where you are going, and you need to figure it out, like, what is the road to this direction or to this goal for your, like, walking, or running, or driving. It's, like, for me, this kind of therapy method helped a lot. This is a journey. I'm not saying that I'm done. I'm now cured and everything is super great in my life. Yes, things are much more better than before, but this is all journey. I'm growing all the time, discovering new things that are holding me back. But overall, I have become much more better leader and a person and a man in my life, and I'm freely sharing my story to everyone. Maybe someone can learn from it.
Thank you. Thank you for this, Hadi. I think this is the best possible way to end this conversation because you said everything that we wanted to say to summarize. The bit that you said at the end resonates particularly with us because our listeners who've been with us since the beginning also know when we have our episodes of just Vladi and I talk about our experiences, it's been a journey for us as well. But I really appreciate your honesty. Mm-hmm. I appreciate your ability to self-reflect. And the whole point of this is to show the vulnerability that it takes to get there. So for both of us, Vladimir and myself, thank you so much for making the time. And I have a feeling we might have another conversation in a couple of years down the line to see what happened in the next episode.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you, Hadi.
You're welcome, guys. It was my pleasure.